Moncrief on News Talk.
The vast majority of people have fallen in love, often more than once in their lifetime. But there are some who do it so often it can be problematic. It's been dubbed emophilia. And Daniel Nelson-Jones in the University of Nevada has been researching into it. Afternoon, Daniel.
Hi, how are you doing today?
How do you define emophilia?
Emophilia is really an individual difference variable that's defined as how frequently and easily you fall in love.
And is it, can you put a number on that in you know, past which it becomes problematic?
Generally speaking, people who fall in love four or more times tend to be much higher in emophilia than the average person.
Would that be four times a year or four times ever?
Usually four times ever, but four times a year would certainly qualify.
I would have thought so. Is it a particular personality type that tends to do this?
Well, emophilia is the personality type that tends to do this. So one of the ways we can think about emophilia is as a minimum threshold for falling in love, right? So people are much more familiar with things like sexual thresholds of being willing to have a sexual contact with somebody upon meeting them. Some people are willing to do that overnight, within a few minutes, but other people take a year, 2 years to feel comfortable doing that. And that term was called sociosexuality, and that was in the psychological literature for many years. So what we're arguing, or what I argue in my research, is that same threshold varies for love. And so some people, the rush of emotions and the connections they feel and the things that they experience lead them to say, sometimes overnight, I feel like I'm in love, whereas other people's thresholds could take years, if ever. So what we're talking about basically is a threshold that some people meet to say, okay, I feel like I'm in love. And some people just have a lower threshold than others.
Mm-hmm. And the people then who fall in love quickly, would they tend to fall out of love quickly?
That's a really good question. Actually, we haven't found any evidence of that. What more frequently happens with people who are high in hemophilia is that they'll accumulate partners with whom they're in love. So they'll have more 3-4 people that they'll say, I just love them all. And which also leads to problematic patterns and of infidelity and things of that nature, because they'll either have an ex-partner that they can't get out of their system more frequently, or they'll have 2 or 3 people at once that they're really seriously interested in, and that can create tension in relationships.
I would imagine it would present a difficulty in forming lasting long-term relationships.
Yeah, and ironically, that's what people high in hemophilia really want. They're feeling genuine sense of love. It just becomes very difficult for them to narrow that scope and focus. And sometimes it becomes problematic because they fall in love overnight and then they'll ignore red flags or potentially problematic patterns of a potential romantic partner that had they sat down and really thought it through would say, I better not get involved with this person.
Are there any indications as to what makes people like this? Could it be the first time they fell in love was so euphoric and that they're chasing that dragon?
There are so many potential theories right now. The most common explanation for most personality traits is that it's mostly or partially genetic, inheritable. There are definitely environmental explanations that can affect this, childhood attachment patterns or maybe the first love dragged out or was too exciting and they're chasing that fantasy still. Now, I do want to be clear that this is a unique thing and it is not the same as anxious or avoidant attachment for those who are familiar with research on attachment styles. Emophilia is a unique and independent construct. So we're still trying to figure that out, but there's a lot of theories that swirl about where this comes from.
Mm. And say the theories that it might be genetic, is there a pattern where you can see where perhaps their parents were like this?
Exactly. So if it's genetic, what we would really need to do is get involved with some identical twin studies. I've yet to be able to do that. But if anybody's listening right now and has a twin registry, let me know. So looking at patterns of identical twins raised together and raised apart would really be the gold standard of determining if it's genetic. The problem with studying parental parental patterns is that parents not only share their genes with their children, but they also create the environment for their children. And so it could be something that hemophilic parents do as well as pass on genetic-wise that creates these hemophilia patterns of falling in love quickly and easily.
Oh, God. So there could be generation after generation of hemophiliacs.
Absolutely possible. And I do want to be clear that there are upshots to being higher in hemophilia and there are downsides to being low in hemophilia. One of the things we found is that people who are extremely low in hemophilia become very frustrated because they don't feel any sense of love. And so they move from potential partner to potential partner without ever falling in love, regardless of the time frame. Or maybe they fell in love finally once they met somebody who met that threshold, and then they'll never meet that threshold again. And that can be a pretty lonely place to be. So I certainly don't want to vilify people who are high or low in hemophilia. It is just an individual difference trait.
Yeah.
As we've talked about, it certainly could create problematic patterns in life.
And so what would be an upside to having a lot of hemophilia?
Well, one of the upsides that we're starting to see is that people high in hemophilia, as we said, accumulate multiple love interests and partners, and they do that relatively quickly. So if a partner leaves them, you still deal with the loss of a relationship and the hurt, but they tend to be able to find a new love interest relatively quickly. And while that's not always the best solution to a lost relationship is to start a new one, certainly hemophilic people are going to fall in love again. So that's not when they lose a potential romantic partner, that may not be the end of their love life.
And when they lose a partner and they find a new one, though, does that imply that there's something a bit more transient about their connection to the first person that they lost?
That's a really good question. And what we find is that not really. What they're feeling is genuine love. This is not limerence or puppy love or any of the terms we've given to kind of pseudo love. They're feeling genuine love connections, and they act cognitively and rationally the way a person traditionally who falls in love, as we would define it culturally in normative terms, acts. So it's not that they necessarily get the person out of their system faster or anything like that. They still deal with the mourning process like anybody else. It's just that they can move to a new love much faster.
Yeah. When you're conducting a study like this, actually, how do you go about defining what's the criteria for what is genuine love as opposed to, you know, a passing obsession or lust?
Yeah, so that's really tricky. And typically in our research, we allow participants to define love for themselves. There's a great quote from The Matrix, if you all remember the 1999 movie, where she said, being the one is like being in love. Nobody can tell you you're in love. You just know it through and through. And so we let people define it, but we don't stop there because that could be, as you've indicated, problematic. So what we prefer to do is look at the same patterns of bias when they think about their partner or sacrifice they're willing to engage in for their partner to make sure that those patterns are the same. They just happen much faster and much more frequently for hemophilic people. And I can give you two examples. The first example is willingness to step in and pay rent or loan money to a romantic partner. Very often we need to know somebody pretty well. We're in love. And we're willing to help a partner out. Hemophilic people are willing to do that much faster with much bigger red flags in their face. The second example I'll give you is people high in hemophilia. Now, when a police interrogates somebody, let's say law enforcement came to the house and I interviewed my wife as to where I was, my wife would likely lie for me to keep me out of prison if I was doing something nefarious or naughty. However, an hemophilic person will do the same thing. So these same cognitive biases and behavioral patterns, they'll just do it much sooner in a relationship. So if my wife had only been dating me for 3 weeks, I guarantee you she'd throw me under the bus in those first 3 weeks. She's not hemophilic. What would end up happening is she would have told the truth. But now after 9 years of marriage, she would she would certainly probably, I don't actually say that, but I think she'd laugh at me. And then the last thing I'll point out is when we ask about perceptions of their partners, there's a natural tendency to put rosy-colored glasses on when we think of a partner with whom we're in love. We give them the benefit of the doubt, and we tend to see them in idyllic terms. And that's just patterns from the 1990s research that folks have done on interpersonal relationships and love. And we see those same patterns.